discriminate against LGBTQ people in the workplace is a moment of hope and encouragement.
It's expected to have a big impact for the estimated 8 million LGBTQ workers across the country because most states do not protect them from workplace discrimination. Matthew Lasky is with the group GLAAD.
Today's historic Supreme Court decision affirms what should have never been a debate at all, that LGBTQ Americans should be able to work without the fear of losing their jobs because of who they are.
The opinion was written by conservative Justice Neil Gorsuch. CBS News Update, I'm Matt Piper.
One show gives you the information that can change and shape your life. The IMA Doctors. Get straight talk and honest answers to your healthcare questions from the team of doctors at IMA Healthcare.
It is the IMA Doctors Show today. Today we have Dr. Mike Lilienthal from IMA Healthcare on the show with us. Hello, Dr. Lilienthal. Welcome back.
Yes, good afternoon.
And nurse practitioner Carrie Lilienthal Emerson. Carrie, welcome back to KFGO Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Dr. Lilienthal is an internal medicine physician who specializes in osteoporosis, diabetes, and heart disease. Carrie has recently joined the practice as a nurse practitioner with a special interest in women's health. I don't know if we can say recently anymore. You've been there a while now, Carrie, right?
Almost 2 years now.
Oh, see? Okay, time flies when we're having fun. Okay, we're going to start the show out a little different today. We've had questions come into us via email and text that we haven't gotten a chance to get to. So to begin our show, we have a list of six questions for you guys. So let's just get right into house calls here. And if you guys have questions and you're listening, text in. We're going to get to your questions, 35270. You can also call us and talk to them on the phone, 237-5948. But let's start out here. My daughter has had nosebleeds a lot. She is 55 years old and healthy, sometimes two or three a week. What could that be? Is it dangerous?
It's always a concern about what's bleeding. The most common thing is the nose gets dry. So sometimes a simple thing like saline nasal spray several times a day can put some moisture in the nose. If somebody's blood pressure is really high, sometimes that can be an issue. So it'd be good to make sure that that's not a problem. And if it continues on, then sometimes seeing a physician and making sure there's not a varicose vein or something that could be cauterized in the nose, that one might help quite a bit too.
Dr. Lilienthal, could I piggyback on that question? What about for those individuals who get a cut, and you know, nothing particularly deep, but it takes a long time for the bleeding to stop? Should they be concerned or having any tests done?
I guess if it's just that, it may or may not be an issue, but certainly if people are on aspirin or some of the things like Aleve and Advil, they can sometimes make people bleed a longer period of time, so that could be an issue. But if it's an issue, or especially if there's a lot of bruising or other kinds of things, then going in and getting some clotting studies done from the physician would be a good idea.
Okay, I'm going to break this next question up into two parts. It's about shingles. Someone says, my wife wants me to get a shingle shot. I heard it is a two-shot process and in shortage. Is that true?
So, yes, there is a new shingles vaccine. The previous one was called Zostavax. The new one is Shingrix. It is a two-vaccine series, so you get the first one and the second one 2 to 5 months later. There was a shortage initially, but it kind of has caught up now at this point. We're not having issues anyways at our clinic anymore with that.
Well, that's good news. And this person said, I had shingles 10 years ago. Are my chances high for getting them again?
You still can get shingles again, even after having it previously. They do still recommend that you get the vaccine, even if you do have a history of previous shingles. So that's kind of the recommendation from that standpoint.
So, Carrie, I just want to reiterate, because I spoke to someone within the last week who told me, I'm not even going to bother getting on the list for the new vaccine, because last time I talked to my doctor, they said it was going to be a years-long process to even get it. So you're saying if someone walked into IMA today that they would have a pretty good chance in the near future of actually getting the new shingles vaccine?
Yep. So we haven't had an issue with the shortage now for a little while. Initially, we had like a waiting list and all of this stuff, but now we're just kind of vaccinating people as they need it and and going through our people who need to be vaccinated that way. You know, obviously we're not going to be able to vaccinate everybody in one day or anything like that, but it has gotten caught up and been better since the initial shortage.
Well, I hope you got a doorstop handy because you're going to wear out the hinges.
So you're not more predisposed because you had it previously? Is it, you know, are you getting it again easier if you've already had it? Does that make sense?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a 6% chance of having shingles after you've had your initial episode. So your 94% chance you're not going to get it.
But, okay.
So sometimes some people opt not to get the shot if they've had shingles before, because your odds go from 6% to 1%, which is an improvement, but it's not quite as bad as if you've never had shingles where it's 94% effective.
Right. Gotcha. Okay, here's the next question. When you hear your friend or relative went in with some chest pain and found out that they have major blockage, obviously that must have been the case for a long time. How does a person know?
Kind of a odd question. Okay, so yes, obviously blockage in the heart does not build up overnight. That's something that's been there for quite a long time, and you can have an acute episode where the blockage worsens and then you have a heart attack and things like that that can happen. So, you know, if you're having shortness of breath with exertion, chest pain, pain going down your arm into the jaw, things like that that people are really familiar with that can happen with an acute episode, definitely need to go get checked out. But some people can have more mild symptoms and end up with a stress test, and that leads to an angiogram and things like that, where it might not be an acute episode that brings them into the ER or anything like that as well.
I do think it's an interesting question, because I've been in the same boat as this person who's texting in. When you hear that someone, oh, you just all of a sudden have chest pain and you go in and you have major blockage, it's like, well, how did it get to this point? But like you said, there are some people who have who do catch it before it becomes that serious.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a question. So if for an overweight individual or for somebody who has a history of heart disease in their family, should they be taking one of these stress tests on a regular basis? Is that something their doctor would ask them to do as a just in case and to stay on top of it? Or do a lot of times does it go undiagnosed?
Well, I think sometimes, you know, there's different ways to look at this, but if people's cholesterols are very high, for instance, even if they're young, that's a concern. And if they have a positive family history of heart disease, that's another concern. So sometimes we do what we call a coronary calcium screen, where we assess the amount of calcium in the arteries to the heart. That can be a suggestion, can suggest things. And then in that case, we probably would proceed to a stress test after that. If you have no symptoms, and you have risk factors, you could still do a stress test looking for people that are, you know, that may be relatively asymptomatic or have atypical symptoms too. So those would be the options that you'd look at.
Okay, here's another question. Dr. Lillestahl is with us from IMA Healthcare. This is the IMA Doctor Show. And Carrie Emerson, nurse practitioner, is with us as well. You can text in your question to 35270, or you can call us at 237-5948. Someone said, I'm a 60-year-old woman. How often should I get a bone density scan? Are there other immunizations I should be having as well?
So for someone who's 60 years old, it just depends, you know, on their previous scans and if they've been normal or abnormal. If they have no family history of osteoporosis or osteopenia, I usually like to get one shortly after menopause begins. And then how frequently they're monitored depends on those results. So if they have evidence of osteopenia or osteoporosis, typically I like to get them every 2 years. If it's completely normal, then every 5 years or so can usually be sufficient.
I have another question just came in that I want to grab too, because it's a good question. You know, today we're going to see highs in the 90s, tomorrow's in the 90s, possibly Wednesday. I mean, we're going to have a hot week in front of us. What are signs of heat stroke, or what's the difference between just heat exhaustion and heat stroke? Is there a difference between those?
Pretty much the same thing as far as that's concerned. That people, you know, get out in the heat and get dehydrated more than anything. And then a lot of funny things can happen. You know, you can actually pass out from that. You can get kind of mixed up and confused. You can just get exhausted and fatigued, you know, and it can vary. But most of the time with that, you know, you have to try to maintain hydration. Sometimes people take salt tablets. If you're on certain blood pressure medications and things, you want to be careful because the skin gets hot and gets dilated. So it's just good, kind of using good common sense in some of these situations. But
Dr. Lilienthal, is there any truth to the old wives' tale of if you get heat stroke once, you're much more likely to get it again?
There is probably some truth in that. Some people seem to be more susceptible to that. They don't, you know, they seem to lose more water. They sweat more profusely and get more dehydrated. And they probably would have a higher propensity to have a second episode.
Is it something that, am I looking at, I have a higher chance of getting heat stroke again in one summer until it cools down again, or is it the rest of your life? Is it, you know, sort of that one and done, kind of the same thing as sunburns, where if you get a sunburn really bad, you're more susceptible to that until your skin has time to heal?
It's probably going to be with you lifelong. If you have one episode, if you went and repeated the same situation, you likely would have another episode. So it's just something. Now, some people learn pretty quickly after they have an initial episode, so they don't get in that situation, and that's usually the smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm. I'll speak from personal experience that I I can pinpoint the time that it got really bad, and I feel like it's just gotten worse every time after that, and I feel so susceptible to heat now in ways that I don't remember before that one incident where it had me very ill.
Sure.
It's bad.
I'm not, no judgment to people who
it's
wear
bad
bucket hats during the summer. They obviously have it figured out.
Okay, here's another question. Is a test for elevated liver enzymes included in a routine blood test? And what are the dangers of elevated liver enzymes?
Usually we do include a comprehensive metabolic panel as part of routine lab monitoring for most patients. So that's something that would usually get done annually, and that includes liver enzymes. So if they're elevated, definitely something we look into. We order further liver testing, looking for evidence of hepatitis and things like that. And then sometimes they may even end up with a liver ultrasound looking for evidence of fatty liver and things like that to kind of know what's causing the elevation.
Sounds good. We'll continue to take your questions. This is the I'm a Doctor show on KFGO. We've got a tick question coming up in just a moment. And also a question about turmeric. We'll get to those and all of your questions. You can text in now to 35270 or you can call us at 237-5948. IMA Doctor Show on KFGO. With us now are Dr. Mike Lilienthal from IMA Healthcare and nurse practitioner Carrie Emerson. We're taking your questions. Okay, another summer-ish question for you guys. It's tick season and I am nervous. Are there some ticks that can be more dangerous? Can I remove a tick with perfume, alcohol, or Vaseline? And what's the best way to remove them? Okay, first, let's get to the first question. Are there some ticks that are more dangerous?
Well, the deer tick is the one that, of course, causes Lyme disease, and that's the smaller of the ticks. Actually, the more common ticks are larger, but that's mostly what we see. But it's really hard for people to tell the difference sometimes. So, but those are the more dangerous ones.
And can you remove a tick with perfume, alcohol, or Vaseline?
You can remove a tick. The best way to remove them is actually just to take a tweezers and grab the head of the tick and gently try to remove the tick that way. The theory behind the perfume and the alcohol and the Vaseline was that you put that on there and suffocate them, and then they would back out and run away. But that doesn't happen. So
that doesn't happen.
Perfume.
And we had a tick expert, just interestingly enough, just an aside to that, we had a tick expert on when that, you guys probably remember this, but it went viral online a couple of years ago where people were putting peppermint oil on ticks and then watching them back out of their skin. And a tick expert told us on the air that that is actually the way to get a tick-borne illness, because when they back out, that's when they, this is going to sound gross, but that's when the tick regurgitates, and that's where the disease lies, is within that regurgitation. So when you make them mad and they back out, you're actually more likely to get that tick-borne illness doing it that way, yeah, rather like than just pulling it out.
Like a toddler.
Sort of, yeah.
So, I've got a side question for this, Dr. Lilisthal. So Lyme disease in a human being, what does it look like?
Well, most of the time it presents initially with a rash that's surrounding the tick bite as far as that's concerned. So there can be different kinds of rashes. Sometimes the tick themselves just generate some irritation and you get a small red rash. But other than that, there can be a different type of rash that people can develop. So that's one thing. But then there's lots of systemic things that can occur. A lot of the times it's like a flu-like illness where you may have joint aches and muscle aches and temperature, low-grade temperatures, and just kind of feel like a truck ran over you, just feel lousy as far as that's concerned. So that's kind of the way it can go to develop Lyme disease. But nowadays, a lot of times we'll put people on an antibiotic called doxycycline to try to treat them fairly early before they get to that stage.
Well, it sounds to me like you could really confuse Lyme disease with, the warning signs of COVID-19 a little bit, right?
To some degree, but Lyme disease doesn't have much for respiratory symptoms and even stomach symptoms. So COVID-19 would be more, typically cough, high temperatures, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, loss of smell would be common things. None of those would be real common in a tick-borne illness. Myalgias, aches and pains in the muscles and stuff like that, could be in both of them.
Okay, let's get to the phone lines here. Tammy has a question for both of you. Tammy, go ahead. You're on KFGO.
I stayed with somebody that called me a few days later and said that they had bed bugs. How long does it take before you know if you got bed bugs? And what should you do to clean your house or whatever for the bed bugs? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay, thanks, Tammy.
Yeah, basically, it's usually within a few days that you should notice. And I think as far as what to do about your clothing and your sheets and so forth, is basically just taking everything and washing it. There are some sprays you can spray on furniture and things like that, but primarily it's the clothing you've been wearing and the bedding would be the primary ones to deal with. But
how? So within a few days you notice them. What does it look like, Dr. Lilisthal?
They're just little tiny, I don't know how you describe it actually over the phone. Little tiny,
does it look like bites?
Yeah, they do look like little tiny bites, and the little tiny bugs are very tiny. not sure how to describe them.
Are they red in color than usually, and do they itch?
The rash can get little, what we call macular papular, little red punctate things, and they do itch.
Oof. Okay. Kind of makes me itch just sitting here.
Me too. I feel the same way.
This is the IMA Doctor Show on KFGO. Stay tuned. We've got a little news for you ahead here at the top of the hour, but we'll continue to take your questions. We have a question in here about a shingles shot. This person got their first shingles shot in December and haven't had their second follow-up. Is it too late? We'll ask the doctor that question when we come back here on the IMA Doctor Show on KFGO.
It's time for the IMA doctors to take house calls. Call now, 237-5948 or 800-880-5346, where you get answers to any healthcare question.
This is the IMA Doctor Show. Today, Dr. Mike Lilienthal from IMA Healthcare is on the show with us, as well as nurse practitioner Carrie Emerson. We're taking all of your questions. Back to the text club we go here. One of the first questions we got in is, and this might have been to the question about nosebleeds, but they were wondering if turmeric can cause nosebleeds and sore gums. Either of you know about that?
And I don't think I know that it causes nosebleeds or sore gums. As far as side effects are concerned, but I don't have a lot of patients that I put on it, so it's possible.
Sure. I'm a 62-year-old woman diagnosed with a leaky valve to my heart. Can it heal itself?
It typically won't heal itself, but it will. It may stay stable for years and years and years and not ever require anything done to it, but sometimes if they get severe, of course, they can be replaced, and that's typically followed with an echocardiogram every year or two and to see if it's staying the same or worsening.
And this question about, and I mentioned this before the top of the hour, if I had my first shingle shot in December and haven't had a second follow-up yet, is it too late?
About a little bit over 6 months, then probably he may end up having to repeat the series at this point, unfortunately.
How is it every 6 months then?
So it's usually the first vaccine and then the next one 2 to 5 months later. It can go up to 6 months, but usually after that, then you want to repeat the series.
Yeah, that might be for sure. Okay. Hope that answered your question. Call your doctor for more information. Hey, speaking of calling your doctor, are you guys accepting new patients at IMA Healthcare?
Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely are accepting new patients. So, okay.
Last week we talked about the fact that there are plenty of people who put off regular routine maintenance when it comes to their health during
especially,
the pandemic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And now they're going in there. Are you finding that you have a lot of patients who maybe waited just a little too long? And if they had waited any longer, they could have had some pretty serious complications with things like everything from blood pressure testing to cholesterol to diabetes maintenance?
You know, those are all things that we like to follow routinely, and it can have detrimental consequences for the patient's health if they do put off their routine appointments for that stuff. So definitely we are recommending that people still come in, even if it's for a telehealth visit and they come in for their lab work separately or something like that, for routine checkups like that.
I'm curious about this. For those individuals who decided to not get a doctor to see after they aged into adulthood. I will be honest, I was one of those people. What kind of questions can you expect at a first visit if you are looking for a new general practitioner?
You know, we do all the routine things we normally do. Let's talk about their history and their health habits and diet, exercise, things like that. Obviously, they probably would be needing some lab work to determine if anything is acutely abnormal, since they probably haven't had any monitoring of anything. And you can find a lot of things from those type of people. I've had a few of those situations before.
Sure. Will vitamin D save my life? Should I really be taking 4 times the recommended daily dose?
It's pretty hard to overdose on vitamin D, so you're probably still fine. Most even our international units is the average daily dose, or is the recommended daily dose. So if you're up to 4,000 or 3,000, you're probably still fine. And some people do require more just to keep their levels at a reasonable level. So if you really want to know, you can obviously go in and just get your level checked and see where it's at and work from there.
How do you test vitamin D? Is it a blood test?
Yeah, it's a blood test.
Okay. That might have been a silly question, but I didn't know, I guess. How are you still talking to your patients about COVID-19? Is it still that you're recommending if they think that they have symptoms to call you guys before they come in?
Yes, we're still, you know, recommending that people who are acutely ill with respiratory symptoms not come in, if possible, to the clinic. just to try to prevent exposure to our other patients. So we do still offer routine telemedicine appointments, and we can still have screening or the test done with the drive-up services that are available in Fargo right now.
Can you develop allergies later in life? Can you develop allergies later in life?
Usually, yeah, you can develop. Some people do develop allergies later in life, but that's very uncommon. The most common is that they start with allergies as a child and they persist. Sometimes they may have a hiatus where they do better and then, you know, then worsen again. But more likely, it's going to be somebody that has lifelong issues.
Sure. Oh,
so let me ask about over-the-counter allergy relief or allergy treatment. Can you build up an immunity, or can you build up what's the word I'm looking for, where you take it too often?
Yeah, tolerance to them. So
yeah, tolerance. You know, there you go. Thank you.
Typically not with antihistamines. You know, the Claritin and the Zyrtec and so forth are the Allegra pretty well. You don't usually develop a tolerance to them. Some people respond better to one of them than another, so sometimes it's okay to experiment around and try different ones to see if one works better. But usually not a tolerance.
Allergy medications, I've been told in the past, is something that you have to take almost for a couple of weeks to notice any difference. You can't just take it and get instant relief. Is that right?
Especially for medications like Flonase, the nasal steroid, that can definitely cause or be related to that. Or sorry, with Flonase, you definitely need a couple of weeks to notice a huge difference. But with the other ones, you would probably notice this difference, you know, the same day that you take it.
Here, going back to our vitamin D, what's the best way to increase your vitamin D? Do you recommend a supplement?
I think up in North Dakota, I would recommend a supplement because you just don't get any sun for, you know, 12 months out of the year. And we just don't get the conversion in, you know, and in the warmer climates, you know, you get a lot of vitamin D that's formed through the skin, through sunlight, of course. But I have a lot of my patients just take it routinely.
Sure. If you have any questions for the doctor, we just have a few minutes left, about 15 minutes left here on the IMA Doctor Show. You can text in now to 35270, sponsored by 702 Communications, or you can give us a call, 237-5948. The IMA doctors are on the air with us here on KFGO, Dr. Lilla Stahl and Carrie Emerson. Let's talk about, we have a question in here about kidney stones. When do I need surgery for a kidney stone?
Well, mainly if it doesn't pass is the issue. So if you have a stone that, you know, goes from the kidney and gets stuck in the ureter tube, which is the tube from the kidney to the bladder, it can be extremely painful. A lot of people end up in the emergency room getting medications for pain. Sometimes use medications to try to get them to pass. But if they don't pass and the kidney gets obstructed, it can cause kidney damage, and they probably need to have it go in and extract the stone.
Dr. Lilla Stahl, I'm curious. There was a story not too long ago about Bayer aspirin being kind of at the center of promoting the fact that you should be taking an aspirin a day. They've got a big heart on their box. It's low dose for daily use. Do you still recommend to people to take a low dose aspirin every day, or have we moved beyond that?
Well, I think that, you know, the baby aspirin a day is for certain types of people. For instance, if people have had a stroke or a heart attack, you know, that would be a class of people that would take a baby aspirin. But nowadays, if people have not had that previously, then we don't recommend that they take the baby aspirin.
Also, someone is listening from Scottsdale, Arizona. Greetings to my brother and niece. Proud of you both. That's another text into 35270. I couldn't just let that one go. We had to get a shout out from some family members listening from far away. So thanks for texting in to 35270. Knee pain. At what point, you know, maybe we should talk about before knee pain. I know a lot of people talk about knee pain, but before we get to that question, how can you protect your knee from pain? Or should people be doing something to protect their knee before something becomes painful?
The main thing people can do to try to protect their knees is to try to maintain a weight that is a normal BMI, basically. The problem we have a lot of times is people age. Also, our joints get worse and develop some osteoarthritis and things like that. But also, with the growing epidemic of obesity in our society, that is really not nice to our joints either. And so that is another thing that really takes a toll on them.
Well, you mentioned it, osteoarthritis. That's the question. What is knee osteoarthritis?
So osteoarthritis is more so the wear and tear arthritis that comes with age. Some people are also just more susceptible to that type of arthritis and may get it worse than others as well, but that's the type of arthritis that would be.
Okay. I know that a lot of people complain about knee pain in general. Sleep disorders, you guys don't do anything with sleep disorders at your clinic, do you?
Not directly. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
We do, you know, oftentimes are able to make the diagnosis, at least clinically, by their history. And then we will set up the tests for them. We don't directly do them through our office, but we arrange through the sleep centers and so forth to have them get a test. Sometimes we just do a screening at home. It's called an overnight oximetry, where people wear a little oximeter on their finger and they can see if their oxygen levels drop through the night. And sometimes that's another way of screening where they don't have to do a formal test.
Oh, interesting.
And they can do the sleep test at home now, too. So that's the other thing that happens. So.
Well, that's nice, because I always think when you do those sleep, do you actually sleep when you're somewhere else? So, yeah.
Well, that can be a problem.
Right. If you're anything like me, it's just you're half sleeping all night long. Also, someone texted in and said, kidney stone worse than childbirth by miles. Is kidney stone one of the most painful things?
Yes, that's what I've been told. It's one of the most painful things that you can have.
Because I mean, childbirth didn't feel good either. So I don't know what a kidney stone feels like. But this person,
neither are probably good.
Yeah, this person must know both, because they said kidney stone worse than childbirth by miles. How long does it take for a kidney stone to pass? If we're talking about this, or is it a certain amount of time before they say okay? Because are you in pain the whole time, or are you in pain when it passes?
You're in pain when it passes, but sometimes they can kind of move down and then just kind of sit in a spot for a while and be less painful, and then, you know, move a little bit more and become more painful. So it sometimes can be a little intermittent, depending on what's happening.
Okay.
I've got a question here that I got into my personal cell phone from somebody who's listening from far away as well. And they say, I spend part of the year in Arizona and I spend part of the year in Minnesota. Should I have one doctor, or should I have a doctor in each location? So kind of reinforcing that, do you ever share patients with doctors in other regions?
Yeah, we do that all the time. You know, so we oftentimes will have a patient, my patient here, that of course goes down to Arizona for the winter. And sometimes they'll establish that care down there. If they're doing pretty well, they may not, you know, they may just see me up here, but I think it's probably the better of the two to have a physician in each area. So if you run into trouble, you've got somebody that you can call.
Sure, and that way you can be the favorite, right, Dr. Lilestall? That's the
that's right.
Dr. Mike Lilestall from IMA Healthcare and nurse practitioner Carrie Lilestall Emerson have been with us today on It Takes Two for the IMA Doctor Show. This will be podcast at kfgo.com after the show. You can find out more about IMA Healthcare at imahealthcare.com. Also, just give them a call if you're looking for an appointment, 701-280-2033. You can visit them as well, located at 4450 31st Avenue South in Fargo, North Dakota. As we checked out the other night for parking lot bingo, it's a nice big parking lot over there at the corners of 32nd and 45th Street. IMA Healthcare is focused on whole person preventative and specialized medical care. Instead of simply treating a symptom, they'll work to find the source of that symptom and what it means to your overall health. Join us July 21st for the next IMA Doctor Show. And thank you again to Dr. Lilestall and Carrie Emerson. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
You bet. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
News Radio. KFGO.